The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, it seems that your brain does not kind of age in a, I suppose, in a gentle way. It has major structural changes at four points throughout your life. And to explain all of this, we're joined by Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. At 9, at 32, at 66 and 83.
They're the turning points. But yeah, your brain is changing all the time, basically, as you get older. But there's four turning points they've spotted that really happen at those ages.
Okay, so 0 to 9, what's happening?
Yeah, it's, well, interesting, when you're born, you have loads of too many synapses, too much connectivity, and it gets pruned down. They've noticed that for a good few years now. So basically, you lose the bit you don't use as an infant. Then at 9, you stabilise into this childhood brain, if you know what I mean. The structures of the brain say you're now in childhood. And that's the first turning point. And that's stable for a while. And then the next big one, Pat, is when you're 32. Now, that was a surprise.
Yeah, I would have thought. You know this thing that the teenager does not really mature until he or she is in their mid-20s?
Yeah.
That's what they used to say. It's later
it's
than that.
32. But yeah, no, it is changing. As an adolescent, obviously, your brain is changing. Yeah. But you reach 32 and now your adult brain is fully in place, is the way to think of it. And then very stable. There's a plateau. They call it a plateau. And that lasts till you're 66 and then you get the next change. But it's amazing. It was 3,802 people, can you believe, were scanned at different ages. So it's a very elaborate study. And that the 9 is the first one, 32 is the next, and then it's stable for a good while.
What do they use to scan them? Is it a CAT scan, MRI?
Yeah, MRI. Yeah, it's amazing. This magnetic resonance imaging, it's called. They can see inside your brain. And it measures all the connectivity. So all the neurons are connecting and firing. It measures water, Pat, strangely, MRI, water movement in the brain. And they can use it as a really elaborate way to image the brain. So it's a very sophisticated way of seeing inside your skull.
Okay, so I mean, they didn't follow people from the age of 9 to the age of 83. So
not really.
How was it done?
They took the odd age here and there, you know, the ages every so often, and then measured them, you know. And then, but then it was a surprise, Pat, to see these four particular turning points, I suppose. They were a bit amazed. They thought it might be more gradual, maybe. But they found these four big changes was the idea.
Do we know anything about the quality of decision-making at these various stages? We know that teenagers can be very unpredictable.
Yeah.
Lacking in judgment. Yep. We know that children can do all sorts of silly things, so certainly up to the age of 9 and beyond. But is it suggesting that after 32 that the decisions you make are rational?
Sensible. That's the idea of how precise. That's exactly the kind of plateau, right? And they've noticed that at particular 32 and then on, from then on, basically, the white matter is all connected now. Your brain is fully wired to be an adult, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then secondly, your communication skills, interestingly, improve, they reckon, by all this rewiring that's happened. So there's no doubt now that they're saying that 32 is the actual age of adult onset. And obviously in your 20s, you're still pretty adult. Let's hope that you are, you know. But 32 seems to be the real marker.
Stability happens.
Exactly. It stabilizes precisely. And then nothing much happens. That's the strange thing. For about 30 years, you're pretty stable. Your brain doesn't undergo any rewiring or remodeling. You know, it's very stable for a 30-year period.
And then after 66, what's happening?
Yeah, so 66, then the next change. They've spot on average, obviously, there's an average between people. They notice that the aging process begins to creep in slightly.
And what are you not able to do that you used to be able to do?
Well, your cognitive powers. So it's all about your cognition, I suppose. And in your 30s and 40s and 50s, that's the peak of it. Now, 66, you begin to lose some of your cognitive skills, is the idea here. And they reckon that's reflected now in the brain structure is changing. You lose a bit of the white matter where all the cognition is happening, and they can see that in the images as well. So they reckon from 66 on, we can't avoid it, can we, Pat? The aging process begins to kick in, I guess.
Okay, so things begin to fray a bit after 66. At 83 then,
yeah,
are you banjaxed?
Yeah, well, that's the next thing. Yes, 83 now is the next big turning point, and now the relentless aging process kicks in. From 83 on, then you're in this aging phase. And again, we know as we get older, you lose some of these cognitive skills, I suppose, is the idea. But 83 seems to be the next turning point. And that might say, Pat, that the real aging process begins in your mid 80s, probably, and then you're off then, you know, down the aging track, I guess, is the way to think of it.
Now, that term you used earlier, you know, use it or lose it. If you keep using these things, I mean, you know, the idea that to prevent the onset of dementia, you might learn a language.
Yeah.
Maybe one that you don't even want to, but you learn it because it'll keep dementia at bay. Is there any logic in that?
Likely, exactly. Now, they speculate on this slightly, Pat. So first of all, if let's say you're 9 and you haven't got the same wiring as you should have as a 9-year-old, then you can intervene. The hope is you can intervene and help people by seeing if the wiring is a bit different in children, for instance. They know some of these mental health issues begin around that age, maybe because the wiring isn't quite as optimal. And of course, the hope there would be you could intervene now and help them. Now, you're right, Pat, as you get older, if you keep that brain going, maybe it'd end up with the brain of a 30-year-old in the body of an 80-year-old. Might be the idea here in a sense, you know, because we know what the brain of a 32-year-old looks like. So why not get the brain going and try to make, when you're in your 70s and so on, keep your brain agile and make it look like as if you've got a 30-year-old brain. It's probably overreach. But certainly we know for a fact, if you keep your brain active, like any bit of your body, it'll keep active, you know, and it'll improve.
But imagine having the brain of an 80-year-old in a 30-year-old body.
And there may be some people like that as well. Exactly, yeah. So yeah, the hope is, I think that when they're predicting in a way, you know the way you have an ECG for your heart and your Apple Watch? Can you imagine, Pat, if you can image the brain at different ages and do things to help the brain improve? So, for example, if you learn a new language, you might notice then on your image, oh, my brain is now slightly more agile. You know, it's a bit like taking exercise for your muscles. In this case, you're going to be exercising your brain.
Now, going back to having so many synapses when you're born, you're wondering, therefore, if you hothouse children, does it make them, you know, likely to be geniuses because you're using, you know, they're playing sport, they're playing a musical instrument, they're speaking 3 or 4 languages, they're reading all the time, and you're using all the synapses that are there.
That's exactly it, precisely.
Mozart.
And again, can you imagine if you can image that in children as they go through education? You might modify the education process or enhance it in various ways to make sure the brain is wiring in the right way. Those are the kind of implications of this, I think.
Some of the texts come in. Can you ask Luke, when is Donald Trump going to mature?
Well, there's the next question. He'd love to image his brain. He might be an outlier. But this is on average, remember, so there will be a range.
Interesting that you lose cognitive abilities at 66, which is pretty much the age of retiring. Are they linked? As in, you stop using your brain as much when you retire, and it's because of your retirement.
That's a really good question, Pat. Maybe this was done over these people who were assessed, basically. You know, if you assessed a 66-year-old who was learning a new language, their brain might look slightly different to someone who isn't. That's a really good point.
How does this aging thing make sense when the most amazing physics have historically been done by kids in their 20s and 30s?
Yeah, that'll be a specific skill, of course. You know, the brain can do various different things, and probably in your teens and 20s, you're most mathematically able, maybe, is one answer to that one.
I'm going to play something for you because a major study has revealed that users who come off the weight loss jabs may gain their weight back at 4 times the rate as those who stop conventional dieting and exercise. This data is published in the British Medical Journal and it reveals that within a year and a half, one can return to the original weight. Doctors have been advised to prescribe a healthy lifestyle alongside the jabs, but those at risk of relapse may need to remain on those drugs for life.
And the reason I stopped was because my weight loss really slowed down and it's quite expensive. So I was paying almost £300 a month, which felt like I was just maintaining the weight. And I thought this is very expensive to just maintain weight. So I thought I'll try coming off it and hopefully be all right. But it was not all right. So the weight was coming back on again. So I tried going back on Ozempic. I thought I don't want to go back to sort of what it was. So I'll try going back on the drug. But then unfortunately, it just didn't have the same effect as it did the first time. It was sort of a little bit appetite suppressant, but nowhere near how easy it had been the first time. And again, after a couple of months, I thought, I don't want to be paying almost £300 a month to maybe lose, you know, a pound every couple of weeks. That's very expensive. I'll try and do it on my own. But I really struggled.
Is that something you hear a lot, Doctor, saying that people can go on it, come off maybe, you know, they need to go on it again, but it doesn't have the same impact that it did before?
There was a journal in the Journal of Obesity last year which sort of looked into some of the theories why we see that. And sort of three main hypotheses came up. One was that you can get overstimulation of the pancreas, which is an organ in your body, which secretes insulin that helps regulate appetite as well as store glucose. When you experience significant weight loss, your body releases a whole set of hormones to try to bring your weight back to what it's been for a little while. We call that set point theory. And then sort of third and finally, when you lose a significant amount of weight, what needs to happen is often the reaction to the body is your own natural GLP-1, which is what these medications are based on, may be lower. From the studies, we know that weight regain is far lower in those that get the full wraparound support. That's things like dietetic support, not about what you should be eating, but when, how to manage the cravings, physical activity support to help maintain muscle mass. That's really important to be a resistance to gaining weight. And what's really important and often neglected is psychological support, because obesity is a chronic condition with so many genetic, environmental, and behavioral factors at play. People need support through that process. We wouldn't do that with any other long-term condition.
So, Luke, what do you think?
That's a really important. That's a famous study for the BMJ published. It's amazing. Yeah, that was always suspected, by the way. If you come off it, you put the weight on really quickly, you know, and that's now been shown in this overall analysis. And I think for me, it tells us we don't know enough about these drugs, long-term use. Really.
There was an article in one of the papers about Prue Leith, and her husband and herself went on one of the weight loss things. He lost 3.5 stone. She lost 1 pound.
Yeah, big difference there. You see, you're going to see variation in every biological thing. There's variation, but it's a big concern. This, because does that mean people have to stay on them for life? That can't be good either.
No,
you know, that could be dangerous. What's good about this, but is they're monitoring it very closely. Remember, and everybody is responsible, hopefully, in regard to this.
This one close to your heart. I'm a 54-year-old male. I started learning the bass guitar. I've really enjoyed it. I did it to keep my brain working.
Fantastic. Music is the best thing to do, Pat, to be honest. If you learn music and learn how to read music and perform, that really is useful for the brain. So that's a great one.
I've survived bacterial meningitis twice and having changes to my brain. How would that affect my brain age? Would I age faster because of those two bouts?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's no doubt infections can affect the brain. But remember, you can bring it back by doing the very things we're talking about, I suppose, and keeping the brain agile.
Very good. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.